Welcome, 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 welcome back. Today we're going to talk about this phrase that I'm already messed up, even though they told it to me three times already. I think it's something like protecting your financial future through HR. What individuals don't necessarily understand about this podcast, because I keep getting some weird DMs, this is all about wealth building. What are you doing right now to help the culture? So I have my friend, colleague here that's going to talk about how you can protect your wealth and help yourself through what you're doing at your job. Why is it you really want to preach more? I want to teach more because I'm experienced. If you can learn. So you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Tracy Curry. I am in the HR space, have been for about 20 years. And really, I think the role that I play in my family usually is I get the calls and the questions about benefits. How do I pick this? How do I pick that? So I love this topic that you're bringing to the show, because I think it's stuff that people don't really know and think about day to day.
So how you go to school for HR?
So I didn't go to school for HR, right? Okay. Like, I went to school actually for psychology undergrad, got my master's in business administration. But for me, HR is like a combination of everything I've always been interested in. Mm. I like people. I like to study people. Mm-hmm. I like business also. So mm-hmm. for me, HR is a really good synergy of business plus people. Mm-hmm. And honestly, for me, like, that's what makes organizations profitable. And because that's how most of us gain our income and our wealth, it's also what builds families. So, that's how I kind of stumbled into it.
Until I can hire all robots?
Until you can hire all robots. But they can't also do people things. So you still need people. You're always going to need people.
Okay. And AI and robots about to take over. You said you've been doing HR for how long?
About 20 years.
That's dope. Yeah. So that's the, you well past the 10,000 hour.
I'm probably well past the.
You said you're good. She's flexing right
I'm
now.
I'm flexing yes. a little bit.
Flexing. I love it. So we're gonna get into it. Expediting change, as you know, I hope you watched a couple episodes maybe before you came on. It's all about wealth building and giving practical topics that individuals can break down in little bite sizes and make applicable right away. Yeah. So when we talk about protecting your wealth through HR, give me the first thing that you would say to me to do.
The first thing I would say to you to do is absolutely take the time to understand the benefits that your company is offering you and how you can make them work for you. Mm. I think benefits largely are something that people ignore, right? Mm-hmm. You're getting a job, in particular, the younger people that are just entering the workforce for the first time, they are so worried about, like, what's the salary that they're going to pay me?
Yep.
And that's the end all be all for their decision making sometimes on why they pick the job. Mm-hmm. Or it's like the work-life balance. Do I have to go in the office or can I work from home in my PJs? That kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. People really underestimate the value that benefits can bring. So mm-hmm. just taking the time to understand that, I think, is one of the best things you can do. Learn it, know what it means, know how it affects your taxes, mm-hmm. know how it actually is going to affect you long term. In the event that something that you're not expecting to have happen happens, mm-hmm. you need to know these things when you're not in a stressful situation. So I would say that's the first thing, is just understand what you have. Mm-hmm. And understand when you need to make decisions around those things.
But how, though? Because I don't know what I don't know. So how do I know what's good benefits and what's bad benefits? Especially, well, I was going to say especially coming into the workforce, but mm-hmm. I sometimes, even now, don't exactly know. Like, what do I look for?
Yeah, so I'm going to start my answer to that question from the premise of, for me, health is wealth, right? So mm-hmm. if you assume that you're a healthy individual, you're mostly worried about your income, your paycheck week to week or pay period to pay period, usually you're not thinking about health benefits, but mm-hmm. if the unexpected happens, and these days, like, it's happening a lot for younger people, even mm-hmm. unfortunately you get diagnosed with cancer or mm-hmm. you have a stroke unexpectedly, mm-hmm. like, that's when all of a sudden these choices that you have to make around your benefits become more real. So mm-hmm. get that you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. But life is always happening. So from that perspective, when you take a job, you should absolutely be asking, what are the benefits packages that you're offering me? And mm-hmm. really take the time to understand, like, what that coverage entails. Because when you need to use it, mm-hmm. it's going to cost you money. Mm-hmm. If you're ever out of work because, unfortunately, you have a stroke and now I can't mm-hmm. go to work, mm-hmm. you're not getting your same paycheck. Mm-hmm. So you need to understand, like, how that's going to affect you when it happens.
So how do I proactively find a good plan? What does good mean? And how do I define what is good for me? Because what's good for me is different mm-hmm. than what's good for you. So how do I figure that out?
I think you have to start with your goals, right? So I know you've had a lot of folks on here that have talked about, like, tax planning and financial planning, but mm-hmm. you have to really think about, like, what are your goals as a person? And kind of base it from there. So one, if you have a budget, understand mm-hmm. what that budget is. Mm-hmm. If you're living from paycheck to paycheck, understand mm-hmm. like how that's going to affect your financial decision making. Mm-hmm. And then think about that in the context of I'm the person that always plans for the worst case scenario.
Okay.
If something bad happens, health-wise or otherwise, mm-hmm. and I can't work, but I'm still employed, mm-hmm. how does that affect my income? Mm. And am I picking benefits that are going to give me more coverage? Mm-hmm. Or is this company offering me benefits that are going to help me in those moments of need that maybe I'm not planning for yeah. or I'm not expecting to have happen?
So how do I negotiate that, though? Like, I guess it's a two-part question. So how do I even negotiate that when talking to whomever is doing the offer or whatever? Mm-hmm. It's one question, but then do I even negotiate that with my salary? So let's say they offer me $105,000 and I say, no, I want the premium benefits package and take away $5,000. Does that even make sense?
Yeah, some companies do that, right? So different companies can approach it in different ways. You'll have some companies where usually like your health, medical, dental, those things are kind of non-negotiable because yeah. They're buying for a group of people.
Yeah.
But then they will let you negotiate things like how much vacation time or paid time off mm-hmm. you have. Some of the more progressive companies now, you can kind of pick and choose. So if you don't select medical, they might give you a credit or give you extra money that you can spend in a perk. Something mm-hmm. like if they have wellness reimbursement funds, mm-hmm. you might get a little bit more here. So mm-hmm. it really depends on how companies design it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at a really basic level, you need to understand, one, if they're offering me medical coverage, take the time to learn the terms around that medical program. Mm. Like, what's the out-of-pocket maximum?
Absolutely.
That's a really important number because that always will tell you the most you can spend out of your pocket in a calendar year
yeah.
on your healthcare costs.
Yeah.
If you have companies that offer tuition reimbursement, take mm-hmm. the time to understand what that is. And while you may not be able to use that to always get more money, it mm-hmm. might help you negotiate your offer when you're coming in the door. So mm. maybe I'm not getting the salary that I want, but I know that they're offering a benefit plan that has a lower out-of-pocket maximum, or I'm paying lower deductibles.
Yeah.
Then that might make it worth the trade-off, in particular if you're comparing offers from one employer to the next employer.
Mm. So challenge me on this statement, disagree, agree, whatever the case may be, but tell me your thoughts on this statement. One of the things when I was out looking for jobs and getting offers, I would look at it from a total compensation perspective, right? So I would look at how much was the salary, how many days off, and then my benefits, and I would calculate that. Mm-hmm. So even though I may have been getting a little bit less salary from one offer to the other, I was getting the premium benefits, because what I found was, depending on your level, like manager, director, executive director, they have different levels of packages for the employee, and they don't necessarily offer you that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would always look. So if I was a manager, I would say, well, here's a salary, but what does the executive benefits look like? Like, is that a good thing to do going into negotiations?
Absolutely. But it all starts with knowing what's important to you. So to your mm-hmm. point, we all don't need and want the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a nerd. I have a spreadsheet for pretty much most decisions that I make, right?
Okay. So being a nerd is cool, though.
Yeah, I think so.
I agree.
So if I'm looking at a job offer and I'm comparing, I will kind of wait. Like, for me, medical benefits are very important. I have mm-hmm. a person that I care for that has mm-hmm. multiple disabilities. Mm-hmm. So that always ranks higher for me maybe work-life balance or mm-hmm. the actual salary that I'm offering. Mm-hmm. I know I don't want to go through a bunch of red tape every time I have to see a doctor.
No doubt.
So I would never take a job with a company that only offers an HMO plan, for mm-hmm. example. So mm-hmm. you have to really get in tune with, what do you need? What do mm-hmm. you want? And then use that to help you weight the decisions that you're making around your choices for okay. benefits and comp.
You can't say HMO and then not say what HMO is.
Yeah, so HMO is a type of health insurance plan where basically you have to go to your primary care physician
mm-hmm.
and get referrals before you see a specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And also they only provide coverage if you stay in the network,
mm.
which limits the choices that you have in terms of the doctors that you want to see.
Mm-hmm.
If something's wrong with me, I want to go with the doctor that I feel comfortable with.
No doubt.
I don't want to be restricted to a network.
So implications of out-of-network, what does that mean?
It costs you more money.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So if you're out-of-network, you're usually going to have more what they call co-insurance to mm-hmm. pay, which means the insurance company is going to pay less if you go out-of-network than they would if you stayed in-network.
And these are the questions that I ask to the individual who's making me the offer, or do I look at it, see that it's HMO, and then I research it and then come back?
Yeah, so they should be able to give you at least a high-level overview of, these are the benefits that we offer, as well as this is how much it's going to cost you every month in mm-hmm. your premium. But then you should also ask for what's called a summary plan description.
Mm.
And that is usually a table that will give you some example scenarios, if you will. So it'll mm-hmm. tell you, if you are hospitalized, you have to pay this much of a deductible before your insurance will kick in.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're going to cover 80% of the cost of this, which means that remaining 20% is your responsibility. Mm-hmm. So I always advise people to ask for that level of information. Mm-hmm. In particular, if you know you have chronic health conditions or you mm-hmm. have people that you're going to cover that have, you know, more than kind of just going to get a physical every mm-hmm. year. So you're fully aware of what your costs are going to be before you accept the offer.
So help me connect the dots, because it's not necessarily tangible, right? Like, I know that my salary is $100,000, and I can break it out, and this is how much I get hourly based off of that. This is how much I get yearly, et cetera, right? But there is a hidden cost if you select benefits inaccurately, or let's take it from an abundant perspective, not necessarily the negative side.
Yeah.
Practically, because I don't necessarily know how those benefits are saving me money or helping me to build wealth. So from a tangible perspective, how are the accurate selection of the benefits going to help me build my wealth?
So I think they help you build your wealth in two ways, right? If you look at the positive side of the coin, if you're a healthy individual and you're mm-hmm. genuinely speaking, just going to the doctors for your physicals every year, I think the trick there is making sure that you don't over-insure yourself. So mm-hmm. that might not make sense for you to pick a plan that has, you know, the best coverage mm-hmm. because then you're paying for something that you don't use. Mm-hmm. So those plans that typically have the best coverage typically cost you more on mm-hmm. your pay period deductions. Mm-hmm. So you might not need that. Mm-hmm. Versus the other side of that coin, if you have situations where you know you have diabetes, pick a thing, a chronic health condition, then that's where it might actually save you money to mm-hmm. pay more in the premium every month, mm-hmm. but you know you're going to use it. Mm-hmm. And when you use it, you're going to spend less over mm-hmm. time. So again, it's really getting in tune with what your needs are mm-hmm. and learning those things when you're making those choices.
I'm glad you said that term. I want you to speak more on that. I think you said over-insured. Mm-hmm. So one of the things, one of my mentors, when I was coming up, he would say, don't be insurance and benefit broke. Don't be mm-hmm. living paycheck to paycheck to pay for benefits that you're not using.
Absolutely.
Speak to that a little bit more.
So I feel like I see it a lot with younger people that are coming into the work world for the first time. And when I get questions as an HR professional, a lot of times they don't understand benefits and how they work. So they do one of two things. They don't think they need anything and they try mm-hmm. to opt out of insurance altogether, mm-hmm. or they over-insure themselves and they get these plans that are, again, more designed for folks that have more intensive needs.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to take the time and explain, like, well, this is what the coverage is, and just asking basic questions. Mm-hmm. And most organizations, if you have like large group plans in particular, they'll have services where you can go in and kind of type in. They'll ask you questions like, well, how often do you go to the doctor? Mm-hmm. Do you have allergies or medications that you're getting on a routine basis? Mm-hmm. And that will help guide you to, well, this might be the best plan for you based mm-hmm. on what your needs are. So mm-hmm. I would just say, don't be shy about asking those questions. In particular, if you're accepting a job offer,
mm-hmm.
make them work for your yes to the offer.
And who's they? The individuals who are making the offer to mm-hmm. me. So I'm not weird or in danger of losing the offer if I start asking these questions based off the benefit package. Because I'm not going to say most folks. A lot of folks are comfortable negotiating salary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how comfortable individuals are negotiating their benefits.
Yeah, so it's asking questions to understand your benefits more mm-hmm. so than negotiation. So maybe mm-hmm. putting in that framing it will help. But for mm-hmm. me, it's not a negative thing. I don't view it as a negative thing from an mm-hmm. employer's perspective, because you're not questioning the job mm-hmm. or the company.
Mm-hmm.
You're just making sure that the benefits that you are receiving mm-hmm. will meet your needs.
Okay.
And that actually makes me feel like I'm hiring a competent individual Absolutely. That will take
Somebody
the time to ask
who's smart and asking good questions.
Yeah.
Can we talk about this flexible spending account?
Yes.
Because I don't understand it at all.
Yep.
All I know is FSA and people put money into it. And one time I put some money in there and I forgot about it. And then the money was gone. So I never touched it ever again in my life. Then I was getting a massage, and actually, full transparency, Tracy and I had this conversation last night or the other night, something like that. And I was at Massage Envy. And we were talking about the membership, and they just keep going up too on the low. But anyways, I'm digressing as I normally do. And the one young lady, because I had came a few times because my back was bothering me and I was doing PT, she was like, Mr. James, you know you can put this into your flexible spending account and it could pay for your Massage Envy membership, which is like $1,000 a year, something like that. So what does that mean? How is that possible? Does that save me money? And how do I not forget like I did forget and then not get my money?
For sure. So a flexible spending account is a way that you can take money and set it aside, usually through payroll deduction,
mm-hmm.
to go towards expenses that your medical insurance doesn't cover typically. But they have to be healthcare related. The advantage of that is that it's reducing your taxable income. So any money that you're putting into that account, it's done so on a pre-tax basis.
So that's the key right there.
Yeah.
Because this is wealth building strategy. So say that one more time.
You're not paying taxes on that dollar. So you're reducing your taxable income.
Exactly. So what the rich know and the wealthy know, how they stay rich, how can I reduce my taxable income so at the end of the year, I do not get a refund check? I'm actually lowering that taxable income, so therefore I can owe the government a little bit. That is the nugget. That is the key right there.
Yeah.
So do all plans at every company offer flexible spending accounts?
Most do. So if you have a group medical plan, you typically will have the option to also opt into a flexible spending account. There are also other types of health care plans that are high deductible plans that offer a health savings account, which is slightly different than an HSA.
I don't know nothing about that, so you got to talk about it.
So I did. And these are something that I think are really great options, in particular for younger people that are healthy. And the same scenario as before is I just go and get a physical every year. The beauty of a health savings account is you're enrolling in a plan where before the insurance will cover anything, usually you have a very high deductible that you have to meet, which basically means before they pay for anything, you have to pay $1,000 or $2,000, whatever that deductible is. But once you meet that deductible, then you have that insurance company or insurance coverage. With that, they also give you the option to invest in a health savings account, which is almost like a 401k, if you will. You're putting money into an account that is pre-tax, so you're not paying taxes on that dollar. It is invested in the stock market, and you can choose the funds usually that you want to invest in. You don't lose it at the end of the year. So you said, hey, I put money in here and I forgot I had it and now I can't access it. That is not how that type of program works. It grows over time. It stays with you. If you move to another company, it's always yours and it's growing in this investment account. And when you use it and when you take withdrawals from it to use it for healthcare related expenses, you're also not paying taxes on that. So it gets to grow.
How come I never heard? I'm admitting on camera right now, my podcast, I've never heard of this. I've never heard of this before.
People are afraid of them because it feels like a risk because you're going into a healthcare plan that you have to pay usually a large amount of money before the insurance will cover you. But that only really kicks in if you have kind of more severe health situations. If you're just going to the doctor to get a physical, it covers that. But if you have a hospitalization or a surgery or something like that, then that's when that deductible applies and kicks in.
So two things. One, that's the health care spending account.
Health savings account.
Health savings account, HSA. And then can I change this year to year just like I do with the rest of my benefits?
Yes.
And I said two things, but I actually meant three. I don't want to take anything for granted. What is a deductible? What talk to me. You said deductible a few times. Talk to me about that.
So a deductible, and it applies to health insurance. If you have car insurance, usually that also applies. A deductible is basically the amount that you have to pay before the insurance will provide you with coverage. So you get in a car accident and your insurance policy might have a $150 deductible. You have to pay that $150 before the insurance company will cover the cost of your car repairs. It's the same way in your health insurance.
Absolutely. So I wanted to tease out a deductible is different than your copay. Two completely different things.
Absolutely.
So just again, clarity on this health spending account, health savings account, health shmari account. It's a S. I can actually take these funds and they're in the market, is what I heard you say. And is that similar to like my 401k where it is a pre-selected market, or can I actually select individualized stocks?
You can select funds. So it's kind of similar to your 401k. So it's not like you can go and say, hey, give me like all of these shares of Amazon stock. But you can select the funds that you want to invest in. And typically those funds are made up of the Amazons or whatever the companies are that you select. So you have to invest in different funds that are in there.
That's dope. I hope it's shown on camera. I really have never for real heard of this. Like, that's crazy. I've never heard of this.
So, and here's why I like it, right? So in particular, if you get in it when you're younger, when you're first entering the work world, you're setting this money aside in this health savings account that is now growing in the market. And yes, the market's going to have ups and downs, but if you, it's a long-term game, just like investing in the stock market.
But it always goes up.
It's always going up. It's growing over time. When you take the money out, you do have to use it for health-related expenses. But if you get in when you're young, when you're healthy, fast forward in life, and now you're, pick a number, 50 plus years old, where typically most individuals will start having more healthcare needs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you need to take that money to pay for your dialysis and all those things, it's grown over time, so there's mm-hmm. more in it. When you take it out, you're not paying taxes on those dollars.
Absolutely.
And it's there for you to use without you using your own income at that period in time. So I think people that get in young and leave it and let it grow, it actually, I think, will become quite valuable for them when they're older people and they have more health concerns.
So another investment vehicle. So Shamaria Taj, if you're watching, we setting up an HSA account. Like, as soon as we leave here, I'm going to call you, just letting you know right now. So if I can afford it, I should have an FSA and an HSA.
Can't have both.
Oh, you can't have both.
Can't have both.
I'm glad I asked that question.
So it depends on the type of healthcare plan that you have. If you're in one of those high deductible healthcare plans, you can have a health savings account, an HSA.
All right.
If you choose a more traditional healthcare plan, then you can have the flexible spending account. And the drawback to that is, while the money does go in pre-tax and you're not paying taxes on it, it's a use it or lose it. So you have to use it within that calendar year. Mm-hmm. And if you don't use it at the end of the year, and usually they give you like another 90 days into the next year to use it for the prior year, then it's lost.
Got it. So who's determining that though? HSA or FSA? Am I, or is that the employer?
You're determining it when you decide what type of healthcare plan you want to select.
Got it. Got it.
So if you select, again, that really high deductible healthcare plan, then that comes with access to a health savings account.
Mm-hmm.
If you select a more traditional plan, then that usually comes with a flexible spending account, which is a use it or lose it account.
That's dope. So I'm protecting my taxable income, or lowering or reducing my taxable income. So that's one. So what would the next thing be that you would tell me to do to protect my wealth through HR and through benefits?
The next thing I would tell you to do is really understand what your company provides in terms of short-term disability and life insurance. I'll start with short-term disability, right? So in particular for women, if you have a baby, that is considered short-term disability, right? You're out of work, and usually most companies provide a short-term disability benefit at no cost to you, which is great. They're giving you something for free that usually will help you in your time of need. The challenge is usually short-term disability benefits only cover 60% of your income. So you are effectively taking a pay cut if you're disabled and you're out of work.
Right.
Short-term disability usually lasts for 90 days. So that's 90 days that your pay is not 100% of what you're used to receiving in pay. So the advice that I always give people is, one, understand what your short-term disability benefit provides. Yeah. Most companies will replace your income at the rate of 60% or 66 2/3%.
Okay.
Is another number that you'll see commonly.
That's a weird number.
It's a weird number, but it's very common that you'll see that number. Some companies might do something more rich. So just at least have the awareness of knowing what that number is.
Mm-hmm.
That short-term disability benefit, though, is only with you while you work for that company. So I always recommend that people also have a separate disability policy outside of the workplace. And here's why. Usually if you get them when you're younger and you're healthy, they're not as expensive. And for me, it's dollars well spent, because now if you have a medical situation and you're out of work because of that disability, you're getting your 60% or 66 2/3% from your employer that you're not paying for. And then if you have an outside policy, usually those cover 60%. You're now getting 120% of your income when you're disabled.
If you can afford it.
If you can afford it.
So I always hate to say names because they don't pay me, because I'm advertising for them. But when you say this, are you talking like a, because most people know, they know the little dumb duck, right? Aflac, like, is that what you're talking about? As a short term?
I don't know if Aflac offers that, I'll be honest. But like usually any type of like bigger insurance companies like Northwestern Mutual, there's any company that you can purchase like life insurance from usually will also provide a short term disability coverage that's a personal plan for yourself that you can also purchase.
So does it make sense to do like an Aflac as well? Because like, when I had Aflac, you smirked. You don't like what?
I'm not a fan. I don't want to talk bad about it because I've never used it. But I think for me, Aflac.
You said quick that you're not a fan.
I'm not a fan because I think it's you spend money for something that is supposed to provide you incentives for going to the doctors, which you should be doing anyway. So in my mindset, me personally, I'd rather take that money and just save it myself versus give it to a company to basically give it back to me for doing things that I'm supposed to. But that's just my view.
Makes 100% sense. Yeah.
You get like a disability policy with
Yeah.
An example is, like, let's say your average income is $200,000 a year.
Yeah.
35-year-old person. And you're expected to retire at 65. Let's say your income never changes.
Yeah.
Right? That is 30 years of making $200,000, which is $6 million.
Right.
Now, most people, their employer covered 50 to 60% for disability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And normally the company pays for it. So when you receive that benefit, you're going to get 50% of your income.
Yeah.
And then you're taxed.
That's mm-hmm. crazy.
So then you're used to making $200,000, and then you drop all the way down yes. to less than $100,000.
No doubt.
The company who provides a disability, they have a plan that will fill that entire gap.
Yep.
Give you
yep.
a full salary all the way until your retirement age, and it could fund your 401k
right.
if you need it.
Right.
All types of student loan payments.
Yep.
Yeah.
So KG Financial couldn't resist. He could.
I told him when I got here, he's sitting on the wrong side of the camera today.
He don't even like coming on this side. But that was a phenomenal nugget. Shout out to my man KG Financial. So, HSA, FSA benefits. This stuff is not like the things that the culture typically. Mm-hmm. dives deep into, man. Like it's let me just select my benefits, get this out of my way, and let me make sure you pay me as much money in this offer that I can possibly get, and then the benefits just go to the wayside. Like, what would you say to someone to make sure that they fundamentally understand that this is absolutely key for them to pay attention to?
I think for me, everybody's experience is different. There are two things that kind of woke me up to thinking about it differently, and not just because like I'm in the HR space, so I kind of mm-hmm. I learned it because it was my profession.
Mm-hmm.
But bigger than that, like, you know, growing up with parents that we weren't rich, we weren't like poor, but we definitely weren't rich.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing as they've aged, how having different types of medical costs have affected them in a moment where they're retired and they don't have a lot of disposable income. That's my mother's mm-hmm. favorite tagline mm-hmm. to say. You really have to think about like how that affects you when you get that age. So,
for sure.
Also for me, like my first child was born with multiple disabilities, and in his first year of life, he had, you know, multiple surgeries, and I was getting medical bills that were coming to my door that it was a wake up call. Cause you know, I think I'm responsible. I had, you know, husband and employed and all the things that would make it feel like, oh, well, you're going to be fine.
For sure.
That first surgery bill that came, it was for a six-figure amount.
That's crazy.
Now, granted, I didn't have to pay all of it, but seeing those numbers real time, I got to understand how this works because I'll be poor and I'll be bankrupt. And I, you know, I've done things in life to not be that way, but you can't control health. You can't control, you know, what's going to happen to you. So for me, it's just a matter of being prepared for the unexpected. Like those two things for me were my personal wake-up call to pay attention to it. I also say, like, for me, I don't like to give money away, right? So for me, I want to understand, like, what are people giving me? And I'm trying to take advantage of every cent of
Absolutely.
It.
Count every penny.
Count every penny. And thinking about taxable income, as you grow in your career and you start to make more money, take the time to look up and see, like, what are the tax rates based on your income? Because there are two moments where your tax rate jumps by double-digit percentage points.
Say that one more time in the camera. Pay attention to what?
Your taxable income,
That's right.
Or what the tax rates are based on your income, right? So I think for 2023, when you hit around like $98,000, your tax rate jumps by like 10 or 12%, which means you're going to be paying 10 or 12% more in taxes because you reach this new level of income.
Absolutely.
And then when you hit around, I think it's like $185,000, it jumps up again, another double-digit percentage. So in particular, if you're in those areas of income, 95, 198, like, that's when you should be really thinking about how you reduce your taxable income.
Absolutely.
And not because you don't want to pay taxes. I'm not advocating for tax evasion. But if you're going to spend the money anyway, because you have these healthcare expenses or you have these dependent care expenses, why not do so tax-free?
Absolutely.
It just makes sense.
And that's the other thing, again, the abundant way to look at it and the negative way to look at it, right? Like, it is not tax evasion. Like, we are not Wesley Snipes out here. We believe in paying our taxes as our American duty, but as little as possible. So every legal move to, is it okay to say shelter funds? I don't know if that's an acceptable term. To reduce your taxable income is how you protect and build your wealth.
Absolutely. We didn't even talk about dependent care or flexible spending accounts.
Let's talk about
another type of account you can have, but if you have children, usually it's 13 or under. It can be longer if you have
not 22, not 25. Well, I got 18 and 22.
Yeah, no, that time has passed for you. But there are some exceptions if you have like children with intellectual disabilities, things they can't care for themselves. But that provides you again opportunity to set aside money on a pre-tax basis to go towards expenses that allow you to work while you have a child. So things like, and I think these are things that people don't realize. It will pay for like daycare expenses. It will pay for preschool tuition even. It can also pay for things like after school care, summer camps, things like that.
Separate in my FSA, separate out of HSA.
Yes, it's called a dependent care flexible spending account.
Dependent care flexible spending account.
Yes.
So DCFSA.
Dependable
care, DC.
Yes, dependent care. I forgot what the acronym is, so I don't want to misspeak it, but it's dependent care flexible spending account.
All right.
Yeah. It can also be used if you have like an elderly parent that you're caring for, adult daycare expenses, you can use it for that. So those are all things. So like, and I'm a dummy sometimes, right? So like, I sent my child to summer camp the last two summers and forgot to submit my expenses to my dependent care FSA.
Got it.
I could have.
Right.
So things like that. After school care, school gets out at 2. Most people don't finish working at 2 in most cases.
Yeah.
If you're paying for after school care, you can absolutely submit those expenses and you're basically taking the money back from yourself, but you're setting aside on a pre-tax basis.
Absolutely.
So that's the advantage of it.
Reducing that taxable income.
Yeah. And again, it's you're setting aside money for things that you know you're going to spend money on.
Absolutely. So respond to this thought. So when you say benefits, the first thing that you think of is healthcare benefits. And what do I do if I get sick? But another function of the benefits that you should also be negotiating is your 401k. So are those two separate conversations? But the benefits are the benefits for my healthcare. And then what type of benefit do you offer with 401k and what type of 401k plans?
Yeah, so I would say when I think about 401ks, what I try to understand when I'm taking a new position is what benefits does the employer match what I give in? And
no
usually
doubt.
401k is very much at the top of that list, right?
No doubt. And so, what do you mean by match?
So usually 401ks, most organizations, if you're contributing money to your 401k, they will match up into a certain amount as well what you contribute, right? I think on average, you'll see most companies doing at least like a 4% match is what I say is like a competitive match. If you see organizations that are doing 6%, 8%, that's usually a little bit more rich. And I would see those plans typically in like some government organizations or agencies, universities, those types of organizations typically will do a little bit more than what you'll see in private sector.
So essentially, it's free money. So if I put in a dollar, they're going to put in a dollar.
Yep.
It's in my 401k. I'm compounding with interest and with time.
Yep. And it's growing in the market as your portfolio is growing in the market.
Absolutely. So I might put in $1 and then a company that is rich, or you said a rich plan, I think you said something like that, they may put in $4 to my $1.
So usually it's the cap that they're matching. So if a company is saying they're going to match 4% of what you contribute, then my move is always going to be to make sure I'm putting in at least the 4% if I can afford to do
Absolutely.
So. That 4% is going in tax-free.
Absolutely.
And then my employer is also putting in another 4%.
Absolutely.
So usually it's they will match what you put in, but they won't like go above what you
Absolutely.
Put in.
So that understand that if you are not taking advantage of the match, if you can afford it, then you're leaving money on the table. Hate to say the term free money, but essentially
free money.
So whatever that match is, however much they match, if you can afford it, got to make sure that you put that dollar amount in there so you can get that free money. And then it's going to compound and then it's going to have the market do its thing and it's going to be based off time. So that's another big thing. I know individuals, when you start talking about benefits, people forget about the 401k piece too.
Yes. And again, opportunity to reduce your taxable income because it goes in pre-tax. And that's a 401k, or if you work for a nonprofit, usually they call it a 403b. The rules work the same.
And then I find, and you can speak to this, just like the benefits, they offer different levels based off where you are. So there's an executive plan, there's a senior executive plan, and then there are kind of like these plain plans. So how do I ask that question when I'm talking about benefits? Do I ask again now? Am I asking the HR person to say, hi there, you offered me this benefit plan, but what other, talking about 401ks now? Like, how do I enter that conversation?
So it depends. And to your point, like, that's a little bit more sophisticated, I guess I'll use that word. But if you're applying for usually like executive level positions, in addition to a traditional 401k, they may also offer you something called a non-qualified deferred compensation plan. Mouthful. Oh, man, that was a lot. But it's basically, it's deferred compensation plans or vehicles that you can use to defer compensation.
Absolutely.
In a tax-free way.
And why would I want to do that?
To reduce your taxable income.
Reduce your taxable income. If you didn't learn anything else from this podcast, reduce your taxable income.
Yeah. Now, there's rules to that. So that's where you should be sitting down at that point and having conversations with your tax professional before you make those decisions. But usually for executive level roles, you're getting some type of offer that also includes access to a deferred compensation plan in addition to your 401k or your 403b plan. General rule of thumb that I would say, though, is if you're putting money into that plan, you really should be maxing out your 401k first and then going into that non-qualified deferred compensation plan.
So again, as I love my podcast and learning new things, I was really, this HSA was like mind blowing. I learned something. There's anything else that Shamari has no idea about, or that you want to tell the audience about protecting your wealth through benefits and growing your wealth through benefits and maintaining your wealth through benefits?
The last thing I will talk about, I guess, is life insurance, because I feel like we're living in this age now where it's so common to see the GoFundMes when some people, when people pass away and people don't have the resources even to do the level of service that they want to do to honor their loved one or their family member. So, you know, for life insurance, most organizations will give you usually at least one times your base salary in life insurance at no cost to you by default. So you should, you know, usually you don't have to opt in. It's an automatically given thing. But some companies will also give you the ability to buy up that life insurance. I think that's another moment for me where take advantage of that. So if you're a younger person, you may not need it. You might just be fine with whatever they give you for free because you don't have, you know, people to leave money to. The goal of life insurance isn't necessarily to leave other people large pots of money, right? But at a minimum, it should be able to cover your expenses for your funeral service or have you. I think the game changes, though, the minute you get married or you have children or things like that, because then it's more about building legacy and building wealth for you, that legacy that you're leaving behind. So you think about that differently. Take advantage of the opportunity to buy up life insurance with an employer, in particular, if you're a little older, if you know you have health issues that would prevent you from going out and getting approved for life insurance outside of your organization. Usually when you come into a company, it's a guarantee issue up to a certain amount. So take advantage of that, in particular, if you know it's going to be hard for you to get approved for life insurance outside of that. And most companies, when you leave, you can make that coverage portable and flip it so that now the bill comes to you and you pay it and you maintain that life insurance.
So you actually started answering the question I was going to ask. So finding out how do I, or when do I, or do I at all say I'm going to buy more life insurance through the company that I'm already working for, or do I go in and I purchase some outside life insurance? And then I don't know if I want to get into the term versus whole life conversation, because I'm an all-term person myself. I don't do whole life. I'm going to invest my own money. But let's go back. I digress. So how? What's the mechanics of it? How do I decide, okay, I'm going to buy a little more here in the company that I already work for versus I'm going to supplement with some outside company?
Again, this is where I would say, like, having a financial planner is super helpful to help you figure those things out and really being in tune with what your needs are and what your wants are. So I can only speak to this, I think, from my own experience, Initially, when I was working and I wasn't married and didn't have kids and all that stuff, life insurance for me was kind of like, eh, like I want enough so that if something happens to me, my parents aren't stressing out trying to figure out like how to pay for my funeral. And then it was like, well, I also would love to be able to set them up so they can pay their mortgage off or whatever. Like, so I was going into these conversations thinking like, how can I buy enough life insurance to cover what I think those amounts are?
Okay.
And that was all I was focused on.
Yeah.
Having children and get married and all that stuff kind of changes the game. And now I'm thinking about it differently, right? Like, I'm trying to pay off houses so that, you know, if I die first, my spouse isn't worried about a mortgage. And I'm making sure that I can fund trust that I have set up for my kids. And I'm my kids gonna be trust fund babies too. Like I'm using that as a way to fund those trusts. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about college tuition if they decide they want to go to college or if they decide they want to start their own business. I'm giving mm-hmm. them seed money. So like now that amount is higher. Right. So I'm choosing, well, where do I get the cheapest coverage? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it might be with my employer. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it might be through a private policy that I go out and maintain. The trap for me sometimes with employer policies is when you go to port them over, the cost becomes more expensive. Mm. And it actually might be cheaper for you to get it outside of your workplace. So it really depends. Mm-hmm. But I think, again, you have to be really in tune with what your needs are and what mm-hmm. you think your needs might be
so
in the future.
So the personalization of it.
The personalization is so important. Yeah.
And now I'm just curious, though. So, you don't have to answer, I guess, but are you a term person or a whole life person?
I have both.
Okay. All right.
I started with whole life and then started converting over to term, but my employer options are whole life.
No doubt.
My private are term.
Okay. That's dope. Same with me. I fundamentally believe in term, and here's a term, and I pay your term and whole life. And
yeah.
I think somebody gonna keep their head down. The producers in the back, the cameraman in the back.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So you know my last question. My last question is the hot seat question. I appreciate all of the knowledge that we spent. I hope you were paying attention to everything and took notes. But you have this wealth of knowledge up here. The reason I started this podcast is because a lot of people were just talking about what was going on, but we weren't actually, just that word, actualizing it and individuals helping other individuals. We talked about the other night, rising tide raises all ships, right? So what are you doing for the positive progression of the culture? How are you expediting change right now?
I'll be honest, not enough, but I'll speak a little bit about some of the things that I try to be really intentional about. I definitely grew up in a headspace of like pay it forward. Like I had the benefit of having people around me that without me knowing and asking for it, were willing to pour into me and teach me things. Oh. And one in particular, very early on, was kind of like, you know, I'm helping you out because I see a lot of potential in you, but the expectation I have of you is that you also go and teach someone else. So quite frankly, every position I get, every job I get, when I see someone that, you know, I know is very I take the time to pour into other people, mm-hmm. whether it's sharing knowledge like this or just helping them make a connection or mm-hmm. whatever it is. Like, that's one, I think, small thing.
No doubt.
That
that's,
I can do.
That's big, though.
But I think for me, like, I love the work I do for this reason, because mm-hmm. it's a space that, in particular, a lot of people don't take the time to understand the impact. So mm-hmm. whether it's working with organizations, I do consulting work, and I really try to stay focused in consulting with minority-owned companies that mm-hmm. are smaller mm-hmm. and that have a kind of a social impact lens to them. Mm-hmm. And that's a great space for me to be able to share mm-hmm. this type of knowledge and kind of mm-hmm. help them build up and educate their employees in a way. I think for me, like, that's the ripple effect. So, like, I have a lot of commitments. I know I can't be everywhere at every time, but I try to find moments where even if I'm just dropping one pebble in a pond, mm-hmm. it ripples out. And that's kind of, for me, like, how I try to expedite change.
So that's not enough. That's a lot.
You can always do more. I genuinely feel that way.
No, you can, but you also have your own life, and you said health is wealth, right? So mm-hmm. right, so you can't overextend yourself. You kind of mentioned it briefly, helping other companies. Why don't you expound upon that? Because that's how we met, and I think you do a wonderful job at that. So why don't you expound upon that part? Like, how do you help these minority companies? What are you doing for them?
So when you see business owners, like people that are willing to take the risk and be an entrepreneur, you mm-hmm. have a certain level of bravery and courage about yourself, right? And usually you're wearing multiple hats.
Absolutely.
The challenge with wearing multiple hats is you can't be excellent at all the things.
Absolutely.
So I try to, like, insert myself in this space because it's usually something that they don't have time for. Mm-hmm. Like, they are out trying to make sure their product is growing or mm-hmm. they're selling their service to their customers in the mm-hmm. right way. I'm happy to help a company mm-hmm. in this space so they can worry about all the other stuff.
As fractional support.
Yeah.
Coming in as fractional support.
For sure. And again, I don't have, so people, I always get criticized because, like, I don't have a website and I'm not necessarily out here, like pushing my stuff.
Yeah.
But I think some of that for me is intentional because everybody's needs are different.
No doubt.
So for me, it has to be the right fit. We have to care about the same thing.
For sure.
I have to have a passion for the mission that you are doing.
Respect.
It has to align with like who I think I am as a person. And once that's there, I'm going to try to meet you where you are and figure out like what your needs are and craft something that works for you. So that ultimately your business can grow. So like that, I intentionally don't do all those other things.
No, I think that's dope. One of the phrases I try to live by is just because I can don't mean that I will.
Right.
So just because I can rock out with you and help your organization don't mean that I will. I need to, do we have a connection and are you doing good work in the community for folks who I believe are underserved and oftentimes underserved look like you and I. And for me, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm saying screw white people or screw any other type of person, but my statement is those who are underserved. So if you're underserved, then I'm a rock with you regardless what your race, creed, color, or anything is. Tracy, you've been doing, well, actually first though, do you want to shout out your company? Or you said, cause you kept it real low. You didn't say a name. You said you don't put your stuff out there. You're absolutely welcome to shout it out here if you want to.
No, it's really no need to shout it out.
Okay.
People find me.
Okay.
So I trust the universe that the right things will find me. So
I respect that. Word of mouth is the best advertising. I must say Tracy does an amazing job for my organization, Equity Now, Inc., and Legends Charter School. That's how we met. She continues to do a great job. And as you can see, she's pushing and pressing for the positive progression of the culture. So Tracy, I appreciate you taking the time to come onto the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
This was all love. And she could have told me that she was going to talk about HSA. And I wasn't going to know what HSA was, but that's the beauty of the relationship. Always stay in tune with smart people. So listen, you had the opportunity to hear from Tracy as we talked about protecting your wealth through HR, through benefits specifically. And the one underlying theme that was very relevant and inside of this podcast that you could hear, feel, and hopefully just grasp is protecting your wealth through your taxable income. That is the key, folks. Everything that you can do to protect your wealth as you earn money, like Biggie said, more money, more problems. But the one thing we don't want to have with more problems is with the IRS. So you can use these HR benefits to protect your taxable income. The other thing that Tracy said that I thought was dope, she said it right off of the top. I probably should have said it right in my outro first, because she said it first, was health is wealth. I believe health, wealth, and happiness. So if you look at this from a personalized perspective, where are you and where are you with your financial health, with your mental health, with your physical health? And then you go in based off of how that is going to impact you and your family. If you're young and you're single and you're thriving and you only visit the emergency room, don't go to the emergency room. You visit the doctor once for a physical, then that's one set of circumstances for how you protect your wealth. If you like me, you're 46, you ain't been to the gym in 3 weeks because your back is hurting, that's a different set, right? But you got a family, you got a trust. What do your benefits look like? So make sure from that HR perspective, when you take that job offer, you're not only looking at the salary that they're offering you, but you're looking at it from a total compensation package perspective. This is Expediting Change. Please give me comments, feedback. I'd love to hear from you all. It's been real. I want to teach more.